الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم فلما وضعتها قالت رب إني وضعتها أنثى والله أعلم بما وضعت وليس الذكر كالأنثى وإني سميتها مريم وإني أعيذها بك وذريتها من الشيطان الرجيم فتقبلها ربها بقبول حسن وأنبتها نباتا حسنا وكفلها زكريا كلما دخل عليها زكريا المحراب وجد عندها رزقا قال يا مريم أنى لك هذا قالت هو من عند الله إن الله يرزق من يشاء بغير حساب هنالك دعا زكريا ربه قال رب هب لي من لدنك ذرية طيبة إنك سميع الدعاء. Remember when a woman of Imran said, My Lord, I have vowed to thee what is in my womb to be dedicated to thy service. So do thou accept it of me, verily, Thou alone art all-hearing, all-knowing. But when she was delivered of it, she said, My Lord, I am delivered of a female, and Allah knew best what she was delivered of, and the male she desired to have was not like the female she was delivered of, and I have named her Mary, and I commit her and her offspring to thy protection from Satan the rejected. So her Lord accepted her with a gracious acceptance and caused her to grow an excellent growth and made Zechariah her guardian. Whenever Zechariah visited her in the chamber, he found with her provisions. He said, O Mary, whence hast thou this? She replied, It is from Allah. Surely Allah gives to whomsoever he pleases without measure. Then and there did Zechariah pray to his Lord, saying, My Lord, grant me from thyself pure offspring, surely thou art the hearer of prayers. The day before, we were discussing the verse 37 of Al Imran, with which I have started my recitation of the Holy Quran this evening. فَلَمَّا وَضَعَتْهَا قَالَتْ رَبِّنِي وَضَعْتُهَا أُنْثَى. And when she did give birth ultimately to a child, she found that child to be a girl. And then she prayed to Allah, pointing out that what she had in mind was a male child, not a female, but I have given birth to a female. And at that time also she mentioned during the prayer that I have named her Maryam, وَإِنِّي أُعِيذُهَا بِكَ وَذُرِّيَّتَهَا, and I seek thy refuge regarding her from Satan, the rejected one. About this, the last part, I told you that some commentators, there is one tradition reported from Abu Huraira, which attributes which is to the effect that when Mary was born and when Jesus Christ was born, both of them were saved from the touch of Satan, and the rest of the mankind cannot boast of this very special treatment by God, very special favor of God. Now, these are my words, but I have already quoted the tradition to the same effect. I pointed out that in the light of this verse, that tradition cannot be taken to be an authentic tradition. It must have been attributed to Hazrat Abu Huraira and through him to Ahlulah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, because it is an accepted principle by all those who know the science of judging traditions, that any tradition which opposes a categorical statement of the Holy Quran is not to be considered an authentic tradition. It has to be outright rejected, because it is impossible for the Holy Prophet of Islam, peace be upon him, to contradict the Holy Quran in any way while he was himself the recipient of the Holy Quran. So I pointed out that because, according to this last verse, the prayer which Mary's mother made, which is mentioned here, she begged Allah of saving her from the touch of Satan after she was born. So how could this apply to a period earlier? And how could she, the mother of Mary, be saved from the touch of Satan because she prayed later on after the giving birth to their child? That was the argument which I developed. Later on, it was pointed out to me that Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam has not rejected this tradition outright, but has solved or resolved this apparent contradiction by suggesting a meaning which, if that is the meaning of this tradition, then there shouldn't be any contradiction between that tradition and this verse. So I have brought some excerpts from Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam, various excerpts regarding this verse. And in the first place, he categorically declares the same thing which I declared the day before, that first of all, if any tradition is found to be contradictory to a statement of the Holy Quran, whether that tradition is found in Muslim or Bukhari, regardless of its apparent authenticity, it has to be rejected outright. And secondly, he attempts to resolve this dispute by suggesting another possible meaning. So what I said was not contradictory to Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam's claim. What I said was that if this is the meaning, as obviously, if this is the meaning, then that meaning is obviously in contradiction of the Holy Quran. So this tradition, if it is understood in the light as it is understood by many scholars, is to be rejected. So this is a compromise situation, but I'll discuss it in a bit more detail, so you'll have a comprehensive idea of all different possibilities. Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam, commenting on this verse, says, "Maine ek Maulvi sahib ki ek taza tasneef padhi hai jisme likha hai ki Hazrat Isa aur uski maa Maryam ke siwaye masse shaitan se duniya mein kisi ki paidaish paak nahi. Sirf yahi do nafs Maryam aur Ibn Maryam masse shaitan se paak hain. Bas is ibarat ko padh kar mujhe bahut hi afsos hua. ہمیں تو یہ لوگ کافر کہتے ہیں اور اپنا یہ حال ہے کہ تمام انبیاء اور ہمارے نبی کریم صلی اللہ علیہ وسلم کو جو پاکوں کے سردار ہیں نعوذ باللہ مسجد شیطان سے محفوظ نہیں سمجھتے گویا ان کے نزدیک نعوذ باللہ آن حضرت صلی اللہ علیہ وسلم کی پیدائش میں شیطان کا حصہ تھا، مگر حضرت عیسیٰ ان کی ماں کی پیدائش میں شیطان کا حصہ نہ تھا. بار بار افسوس آتا ہے کہ ان لوگوں کی حالت کہاں تک پہنچ گئی. انَ اللہ و انَ الیہ راجعون. یہ لوگ اپنے اس دعویٰ کی دلیل میں ایک حدیث پیش کرتے ہیں جو صحیح بخاری میں ہے، اور نہیں سوچتے کہ سب سے مقدم تو قرآن شریف ہے. قرآن شریف میں لکھا ہے کہ خدا تعالیٰ نے شیطان کو کہا، اِنَّا عبادی لیس لک علیہم سلطان، میرے بندوں پر تجھے کوئی غلبہ نہیں. کیا آن حضرت صلی اللہ علیہ وآلہ وسلم ان کے نزدیک عباد میں شامل نہ تھے؟ اول تو جو حدیث قرآن شریف کے مخالف ہو وہ حدیث ہی نہیں، خواہ بخاری میں ہو خواہ مسلم میں ہو. He says that a few days ago I read a Maulvi, that is a Muslim scholar's book, in which he claimed that except for Mary's mother and Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, no one on earth born of a woman was ever saved by God from the touch of Satan. So only these two persons during their birth were saved from the touch of Satan under heavenly care and protection. And then Hazrat Masih Maud says that saddened me to the extreme. These are the scholars who declare us kafirs, and this is their own state of affairs. This is their own attitude towards the Prophet whom they believe to be the very best of prophets. They claim to be the very best of prophets. And yet, if we agree with their interpretation, it would mean that while Ahadra sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, the Holy Prophet of Islam, was born, he was not protected by God from the touch of Satan. And all the rest of the prophets were neither saved by the touch of Satan. Only Jesus and Mary were. So this, Hazrat Masih Maud declares, is blasphemy. You can't have your faith and yet entertain such stupid ideas. And then he refers to the tradition of Bukhari, to which I have already referred, and says that they found this view on a tradition of Bukhari and forget to read the Holy Quran, which says Inna ibadi laysa laka alaihim sultanun. As far as my two servants are concerned, Satan will never be permitted to have ascendancy over them. They will be totally saved and protected from the influence of Satan. So Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam, quoting this verse of the Holy Quran, questions, do not these Maulvis, these so-called scholars, know that Ahadra sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam was the very best of his servants? Or do they not include him in the list of servants of God? So how, in contradiction to this categorical statement, they ever think of attributing such crooked meanings to that tradition or to the Holy Quran? Then he has two defenses to offer. Number one, the one which I have already offered, it was not in contradiction to Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam's explanation. It was the first explanation which he himself offered. He says, اول تو حدیث قرآن شریف کے مخالف ہو وہ حدیث ہی نہیں، خواہ بخاری میں ہو خواہ مسلم میں ہو. My first answer to this is that if a tradition is contradictory to the Holy Quran, whatever its apparent authenticity, whether it is found in Bukhari or Muslim, it is to be rejected as not a hadith, as not being a hadith. It is to be rejected as something outside, I mean something else which has been falsely attributed to the Holy Prophet of Islam. And he says, this is my first defense. That most probably, this tradition was not a tradition at all. It was later on attributed by somebody. And because it supports the Christian view that except for these two children, everybody else was had a touch of Satan about him during his birth. So I concluded that this may have been introduced into the Islamic books of traditions by some Christians or some other enemies of Islam. Perhaps not other, perhaps by Christians, because that was the period when this tradition was collected by Imam Bukhari. That was the period when Christians had already joined in large numbers. And many among them might have been just hypocrites, because at the time of the Holy Prophet Islam, peace be upon him, we know of many Jews joining Islam, which according to Islam, just entered for the sake of harming Islam. They were hypocrites. And they used to say, join Islam in the morning and return to your original faith in the evening, so that we heard the cause of Islam and people begin to lose faith in this. So that sort of plotting against religion is not a rare phenomenon. It happens in the world. So possibly, I said, that this was also a concoction of some new entrants into Islam. Now, Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salam tried his very best to offer some reconciliation between the tradition and the Holy Quran, even if apparently it was far-fetched according to in the sight of others. But that shows his love of the tradition of the Holy Prophet. He never took hasty decisions in rejecting a tradition outright. Although in this case, he has offered this as first solution. But still, that is his habit. Wherever you read his mention of traditions and explanations of traditions, he always takes this attitude that the traditions of the Holy Quran, which are in apparent contradiction to the Holy Quran, should be studied in depth, more attentively, and some reconciliation should be sought. If possible, then stick to that reconciliation and you don't have to reject the tradition as such. So in the same style, he says, Dusra jis hadith se, Hazrat Nabi Kareem, Muhammad Mustafa Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, Mahbub-e-Khuda, Mahbub-e-Ilahi ki tamam nabiyon ki sardar ki is qadar hatak aur tahin lazim aati ho, kyun kar ek musliman ki ghairat maan sakti hai ki ise sahi hadith tasleem kare. Out of the same love, this is the second possible solution, the reason offered by him. Still he rejects that tradition. Based on the believes in him to be the best of prophets, how can he believe in this tradition to be a correct tradition, while in that case this tradition hurls the worst type or a vile insult upon the person of Hazrat Muhammad Mustafa, the founder of Islam himself. So the very love of the Holy Prophet, for the sake of which we accept traditions and try to reconcile or study in depth so that contradictions are removed, that love requires in the first place to reject such traditions. So the first is an argument which is which is not essentially for Muslims. That argument is a general argument. The second argument is particularly for the Muslims, that no true Muslim claiming to have love of the Holy Prophet can believe in this tradition to be a true tradition, an authentic tradition. Now he turns to the third possibility. He says, agar in logon mein Aan Hazrat Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam ki kuch mohabbat hoti, to ye log is hadith ke ye maane na karte. Aur ek kalam ke waaste ek shaan-e-nuzul hota hai, jaisa ke Quran Shareef mein Hazrat Isa aur unki walida Maryam ke waaste zaruratan is qisam ke lafz bole gaye hain ke Maryam Sadiqa thi aur Hazrat Isa ka rooh khuda ki taraf se tha. Aisa hi hadith mein zaruratan ye kalam bole gaye hain. Now it's a longish excerpt, but the essence of this is, he says, if they had true love of the Holy Prophet of Islam, they should have tried to seek other meanings, which without insulting the Holy Prophet, could have, could throw light on the true import of this tradition. Now, here too, the meaning he offers rejects part of the tradition and accepts part of the tradition. That part of the tradition which says that except for these two, all were touched by Satan, he rejects still. He doesn't support that part. But he says, if Rasulullah Akram sallallahu alaihi wa sallam said that Jesus and Mary were protected by God against the touch of Satan, only that part can be reliable. Not all the tradition. Because that only means that at the time of the Holy Prophet, an allegation had been made against Mary's chastity. And so Jesus Christ was also declared by his enemies to have been born out of a satanic act, an illegitimate child. So because an allegation was levied against these two holy persons, it is in tradition, in line with the Holy Quran style, that they should have been protected by the Holy Quran and defended by the Holy Quran, and the Holy Quran should declare positively that these allegations are false. But because no such allegations were made against other prophets and their mothers, so it was not essential for the Holy Quran to start defending every prophet and every prophet's mother. If somebody is called a thief, it is essential to produce evidence in favor of him that he is not a thief. His character is sometimes supported by testimony of some other people who knew such a person well, and it is said that no, everybody knows he is not a thief. But it doesn't mean that everyone who appears in the court, he collects testimony to the effect that he is not a thief, or he is not a liar, who is not this and who is not that. So whenever an allegation is made, then it is essential to defend such a person against false allegations. So Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam has pointed out that it's so unfortunate that the Holy Quran is defending the leader of Christians, and that is why we believe him to be a pious, legitimate son. The Holy Quran is defending the mother of a holy prophet, in which the Christians also believe that she was a chaste lady. And this is why we believe in the chastity of Mary. Otherwise, worldly-wide speaking, we have no proof. But instead of being grateful to Islam, instead of being grateful to the Holy Quran, what the Christian scholars are doing is that distorting the same evidence in favor, they turn it against all the other prophets and also against the Prophet of Islam himself, who in fact came to their rescue. If such verses were not found in the Holy Quran, why should the Muslims all over the world, not agreeing with the faith of Christianity as such, would have believed in the chastity of Mary or in the legitimacy of Jesus Christ's birth? So it is a favor of the Holy Quran. Not a favor in the sense that every Christian should be considered directly under debt to the Holy Quran, but this is a style. The Holy Quran shows its favors on every righteous person. So a righteous person's righteousness is defended, but it is in very bad taste to give it a wrong turn, distort the whole picture, and start using it for attacking the Holy Quran and the founder of Islam and his mother without rhyme or reason. So that is what Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam has said in the third place. In the first two choices, he tends to reject this tradition as a wrong attribution. But if a part of it to be accepted, not the whole, then this would be the meaning, because that would be in conformity with the Holy Quran. فَتَقَبَّلَهَا رَبُّهَا بِقَبُولٍ حَسَنٍ وَأَنْبَتَهَا نَبَاتًا حَسَنًا وَكَفَّلَهَا زَكَرِيَّا كُلَّمَا دَخَلَ عَلَيْهَا زَكَرِيَّا الْمِهْرَابَ وَجَدَ عِنْدَهَا رِزْقًا قَالَ يَا مَرْيَمُ أَنَّى لَكِ هَذَا قَالَتْ هُوَ مِنْ عِنْدِ اللَّهِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَرْزُقُ مَنْ يَشَاءُ بِغَيْرِ حِسَابٍ. It is also alleged against Holy Quran by many Christian scholars, the so-called Orientalists in particular, that Holy Quran repeats the stories of the Bible which were fed to the Holy Prophet of Islam, and whatever mention you find of the history of Judaism or Christianity in the Holy Quran, there is in fact a theft of the Old and New Testament, and a theft of the traditions of Judaism and Christianity. I pointed out even earlier that if you closely study the same areas which have been covered by the Holy Quran and the Old Testament and the New Testament, you will find a marked difference between the narration, the style, what facts have been mentioned, what have been omitted, and what extra facts have been mentioned by the Holy Quran which are not at all found in any of the previous books, neither in the Old Testament, nor in the New Testament, nor in the Bible. And also there you will find a process of rectification, so much so that some facts as quoted by the Bible are omitted and some others are contradicted positively. Now, if you study in depth these places where Holy Quran goes into contradiction with the biblical statements, you will always find the Holy Quran statement to be much more logical. Now, I didn't say historically true, because the authority of the New Testament is not also historically a proved fact. History of that age does not speak of events happening in Judea around a religious idea. The flow of history was parallel and different altogether. So as far as the historical facts are concerned, nothing is supported. So much so that even some Christian writers of today have started doubting the very existence of Jesus Christ, and the books are now being written. And also they doubt the very existence of Moses and things said about him, and they say it's just a myth of other people, other nations, woven into stories and which found entrance into Jews and the people living around there, and they thought this had happened to their earlier forefathers, while there is no such evidence. So when they say there is no evidence, they don't mean that the Bible doesn't mention it. What they mean is that despite the fact that the Bible does mention all these things, Bible is not a historical book. And the very claim of the Bible says it's not a book of history at all. It is claimed that this was revealed to certain people by God. And if it is a revelation, for those who do not believe in that revelation, there is no evidence whatsoever. That is what I mean. And as far as the history goes, it is based on some sort of facts, some sort of evidence, which may be challenged, which may be right, may be wrong, but still, the system itself is based on certain facts. So these scholars have some reason to doubt. Of course, I don't agree with them, because I believe in the history preserved for us by religious books. But that is my personal belief. Historically speaking, you cannot claim that all these statements of the Old Testament or the New Testament are based on history. They are based on revelation. And revelation alone is not supported by history and cannot be declared a part of history. Now, so the Holy Quran, if it contradicts, the Christian scholars have no right to take the position that the Holy Quran contradicts historically proven facts. What history? If that was revelation, and it was claimed to be revelation, the Holy Quran is also a revelation because it is claimed to be revelation. So a new, fresh revelation has a better right to refresh our memories and tell that something was attributed to the previous revelation which had no foundation. It was man-made, it was not revelation. So as such, the Holy Quran has an authority to discuss these things. The Christians may not believe it, but that is all. They have a right not to believe, but they have no argument in their favor by declaring the Holy Quran to be a book which they can prove to be wrong historically because it disagrees with certain statements of the New Testament or Old Testament. So I leave the history part out. What I point out is this, that every person who wants to investigate and investigate without prejudices, it is the best advice from me to him would be to compare the two statements and refer them to his internal logic, internal sense of justice and fair play. And every human being is provided by God with a touchstone which is built in. And when he reads two statements, his inner self is capable of judging the right from the wrong. Putting these two statements to that touchstone built in our psyches, one can easily see that there some statement is defective and hollow and less to be believed than another statement. So that is the only criterion open to us, and no more debate can be held or no positive evidence which should be permissible in court can be provided by either side. So from this point of view, from this angle, I want to point out certain differences in the statement of the Bible and the Holy Quran regarding what happened with Mary after her birth or before her birth, and what happened before the birth of Jesus Christ and all that. وَكَفَّلَهَا زَكَرِيَّا is a statement made by the Holy Quran which I do not find anywhere in the New Testament. If a child was dedicated to the church, who was responsible for the upbringing of that child? On that, the New Testament is silent. Whether she was still brought up in the house of her mother, how long did she live afterwards to look after her, that is not mentioned. If a child was dedicated, whenever the child was dedicated, it was the custom, established custom, that the child was handed over to the church authorities. Previously it was the Jewish church and later on it became the Christian church. So it was not like the dedication with which we are aware, the Ahmadis, that I dedicate a child and then upbring the child myself, look after his education when it's finished and when he's grown up, then I offer his services to the community. That's a completely different way of dedication. I'm basing my argument on what we receive as customs from Christian authorities and the Jewish authorities. So as such, what happened to Mary? She must have been handed over to the church under whose supervision and whose patronage was she brought up? The Holy Quran points out that she was brought up under the patronage of Zechariah. Now, Zechariah is, according to Christians, a high priest of the Jewish church of that time. And we find two names, similar names, mentioned in the Bible. One is Zechariah, spelled with E, Z-E. And another is Zechariah, spelled with A. According to the biblical statements, Zechariah was the priest, high priest of the time, the father of John the Baptist, and the father of Johanna, John. Is he called the Baptist? John the Baptist. The other one is John the Revelationist or something, you know. I got confused with that. The two Johns, one came later, he is the John of Revelation. And this was the John the Baptist. Anyway, so the Christians and the Jews believe that this Zechariah of the time of Mary was not a prophet. He was just a high priest. And according to them, Zechariah, who was a prophet, happened to live much earlier, and his book is mentioned under the same title, Zechariah, but spelt with an E. So that is one difference which should be kept in mind, that when we say Zechariah, the Holy Quran, when the Holy Quran mentions Zechariah, it does not mention the mother. Secondly, the New Testament does not mention the patronage of Zechariah under which Mary was brought up. This is why it has to mention later on that there was a panic when Mary was discovered to be pregnant. And people wanted to give, the church elders wanted to give her a cover. This is why she escaped and went to mountains, to the house of Zechariah's wife, and lived there for 3 months. And later on, you know what happened, it's quite apparent. But the point is, why should the Holy Quran mention this, that Zechariah looked after her? The reason is that if a child, a girl, is handed over to church without anybody specially caring for her, it would cause definitely scandal later on when she grows older. And also, anybody could have access to her. And there is no guarantee for her true, correct upbringing. And it looks illogical. And secondly, if it was a younger man, then again there would be doubts, her having some relationship with that girl, because after all, she was not his daughter. So why Zechariah is mentioned? Also, you will find that Zechariah is mentioned to be very old at that age. When he started looking after Mary, he might not have been that old. But when Mary grew older and came of age, at that time, both according to the Holy Quran and according to the Bible, New Testament, you can see Luke, for instance, chapter 1, for this narration, he had grown so old that when he was told by the angels that God has decided to grant him a son, he expressed surprise. He said, how at this time, at this age, when my wife is also very old and she is barren, and it is impossible for me to bear, have any relationship which would result in a child's birth. So that is the reason why the Holy Quran has to mention Zechariah as the mentor and patron of Mary, because nobody could sustain any doubts about the correct upbringing of Mary. So it's another way of, it's in fact, it's an answer to this prayer. Now this is how you find connections between the verses of the Holy Quran. Apparently they are disconnected, but they have a positive bondage between them and a logical bondage which develops. The end bit of the previous verse was, وَإِنِّي أُعِيذُهَا بِكَ وَزُرِّيَّتَهَا مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ. O my Lord, I pray thee that this child of mine, this helpless girl, whom you have bestowed upon me, because I have dedicated her to the church and I will not be responsible anymore looking after her, I want her to be saved from the influence of Satan. That is to say, wanton people, wanton men. Any Tom, Dick and Harry could reach her and I will be helpless. I won't be able to do anything. And I have done it for your sake. So please, God, look after her. And in answer to this, the Holy Quran says, وَكَفَّ لَهَا زَكَرِيَّا. She couldn't find a better protector than Zakaria for that helpless child. Not only that he was a pious man, according to the Holy Quran, he was a prophet of God. And all prophets are innocent. And thirdly, as far as the onlookers are concerned, the outsider observation is concerned, he was so old that it was impossible to attribute wrong things to him or to consider that he entertained bad thoughts about his ward. So that is the connection between the two verses, and that is why Zakaria is mentioned here particularly. And not only that, the verse goes on building the character of Mary, of which you find no reference in the Bible. So in reality, the person of Mary, which appears in the Holy Quran, is not only at least as chaste as it is claimed by the Christians, but around this person an atmosphere is built by the Holy Quran which proves it logically that such a child has to be believed in. She has to be chaste and nothing but chaste. That is the beauty of the Holy Quran. This is why when we discuss things with Christians, I always point out to them that you can't respect Mary more than we do, because we have been given more reasons to respect her, and because we are logically convinced by the Holy Quran that there is no other way of entertaining an image of Mary, about Mary, other than that of chastity. So this is the argument which is building. It says, كُلَّمَا دَخَلَ عَلَيْهَا زَكَرِيَ الْمِهْرَابَ وَجَدَ عِنْدَهَا رِزْقًا. Whenever Zakaria entered room of recluse for Mary, mihrab is the best room, the best chamber of the house in Arabic. Mihrab has many other meanings, but also it has the connotation of a room which is the very best, the chosen one and the selected one. Also, it means a place of recluse anywhere in the house. So that shows that Mary had gone into a sort of, a life of detachment from the world. She remained alone most of her time as a child, and was busy praying to God and having communion with God as best as she could. And from time to time Zakaria visited her, and whenever he entered the room he saw her well provided. Provision is mentioned. And then, surprised, Zakaria asked her, where had this come from? And the answer would be, it is from my Lord. And he provides whomsoever he pleases without limit. Now, most of the Muslim scholars have attributed only one meaning to this rizq, that is provision. They claim that there were fruits and edible things, and they appeared out of the blue. And they were just there, sent specially by God. It could be so, but we don't have to go that far as this is concerned, because it was the old custom and still is everywhere in the world, that whenever somebody has a detached life from human affairs, when somebody dedicates himself or herself for the sake of God and has no means of livelihood independently, then people of faith go to such a person and provide him with all sorts of things. This happens everywhere in the world, so if it happened in the case of Mary, it's not surprising at all. And whenever you ask such pious people where it came from, they would So why should we attribute something very special, extraordinary and supernatural to it? But we don't deny the possibility of supernatural. Supernatural in the sense that if God wanted to provide somebody using his powers in a manner that the nature having played a part in it was not visible to the human beings, that can happen. That is what we consider supernatural. We don't consider supernatural to be a violation of natural laws by God Himself, who created those laws. We consider, in this terminology, the supernatural to mean that Allah or sometimes so ordains that some laws of nature secretly come into play under His special decree, which are not visible to the people of that time, which are not comprehensible to the people of that time or understandable, but they are not in violation of nature. So, as far as that goes, we also consider it to be a possibility. But that is not all. What I want to point out tonight, this evening, was that Hazrat Musleh Maud particularly has offered another meaning which are not contradictory to these meanings, but which are additional and preferable. He says, on the authority of the Holy Quran and the tradition, that rizq, provision, does not only apply to the material worldly provision, but it applies particularly to the heavenly provisions. Heavenly provisions in the sense of dreams, visions, and contacts with God, having received prediction from God, appearance of angels, and so on and so forth. And whenever this word rizq is mentioned about a holy person, we must first of all turn our attention to the very best meaning it contains and which is more appropriate in application to the person about which this word is used. So here Zakaria also could not have been impressed by worldly things, and this was not a phenomenon unknown to him, that people, out of respect for holy people, do provide them with things, presents, etc. So Hazrat Musleh Maud has laid special stress on this fact, that here the Holy Quran means the spiritual provisions. And when he heard from the mouth of a child or a young girl things which were revealed to her directly by God, experiences which were spiritual and highly ecstatic, he was really wonderstruck that I am a prophet of God, and yet this child, who is a lay woman, who is a girl and who is not a prophet, is also very specially treated by God. So whenever he went there, he always found her with some new spiritual experiences, some new revelations, some new dreams. And this is how she was brought up. How could such a girl be unchaste? This is the reason why the Holy Quran mentions it in this context, immediately after the prayer of Mary's mother. That not only was she brought up well and was well protected, but also she was brought up directly by God, under God's supervision. And even Zechariah did not know what was happening to her. Angels came to her, they looked after her, they spoke with her, and God continuously gave signs to Mary of his nearness and his love of Mary. هُنَالِكَ دَعَ زَكْرِيَا قَالَ رَبِّ حَبْلِي مِنْ لَدُنْكَ ذُرِّيَّةً طَيِّبَةً إِنَّكَ سَمِيعُ الدُّعَى. Now, a prophet, or at least according to the Christians, a high priest of a great order and piety, he was so deeply impressed by the piety of that lady that because of her example and her being a model girl, he started entertaining hopes, or at least desire, of having a son like her. You know, that was the quality of that girl who was to give a virgin birth. Now, in view of all that character and the previous history, it would be a wanton thing to not to believe such a girl and go on insisting that she had illicit relationship with somebody. So the birth of Yahya, that is John the Baptist, owes its gratitude to the piety of Mary, according to the Holy Quran. هُنَالِكَ دَعَ زَكْرِيَا رَبَّهُ. There and then, having been so deeply impressed, Zakariya once prayed to God, قَالَ رَبِّ حَبْلِي مِنْ لَدُنْكَ ذُرِّيَّةً طَيِّبَةً. O my Lord, grant me from thyself a progeny or offspring which should be pious and chaste like this girl. I mean, that is implied. إِنَّكَ سَمِيعُ الدُّعَى. I know you do listen to prayers. Now, this سَمِيعُ الدُّعَى now again refers to the prayer of Mary's mother. You see, here there was the evidence. It is a connected story, and it came to the mind of Zechariah that no better proof of Allah's listening to prayers can be offered at this time than the very person of Mary herself. Because her mother had prayed that, O God, save her from the touch of Satan, and because I have witnessed it myself, that he is saved completely from the touch of Satan. She is a holy lady. So, I know you listen to prayer, you know. I mean, that's no longer a secret, that sort of thing, you know. Of course he knew it, even otherwise. But it's a style of praying in a manner that Allah is, if we use the human terminology, is definitely moved, you know. And there's no way out of for Allah to refuse such a prayer. There's styles of begging, you know it. And because man has also learned from God, his nature, inner nature is built by God and has a stamp of God. So if we apply these things to our ordinary experiences, then we begin to understand such events better. You know, there are beggars and beggars. And some, when they ask, beg of you, you feel like, you know, turning them away, or sometimes be harsh to them. Sometimes beggars are even kicked out of the houses, or, you know, spurned, their efforts spurned from at the very doors. And sometimes there are beggars, you know, who have a way with you that you even invite them into the houses. We know such ladies in Pakistan, particularly, I know in India as well, where they are deeply influenced by some beggar's style of begging. And they keep standing at the door looking at them with some mercy. They give them something. I say, all right, wait a minute, I'm going to bring something more for you. And then they say, okay, Babaji, would you please step in for a while? Let me serve you better. And then they begin to hold a very special relationship of reverence towards such people. So similarly, these things are told to us by the Holy Quran, that when you beg of Allah, you should also learn from the style of those prophets who made an impression on God, in a sense, that he could not reject their prayers. So when you remind God, that is to say, of course God remembers everything, but this is just a human terminology. I mean, I know it's inadequate, but to give you a message, I have to use this terminology. When you pray to God, if you remind Him of earlier acceptances of prayers in the similar situations, it would be like reminding a judge of a precedence, quoting a previous decision from a previous court, which was very similar in nature and events. So the judge, of course, judge is helpless. Allah can refuse, but a judge can't. So similarly, if you remind God of precedence, that is, if you are reminded of precedence, and you point out during the prayer, "Oh God, you have been doing this, I know." So it's more likely that such a prayer will find its way into the mercy of Allah. And of this we find many references in the Holy Quran. From this point of view, it's a most excellent book from the books of the world. And this is not just a tall claim. It is for anyone to judge and compare. The styles of prayers which have been mentioned in the Holy Quran are not mentioned entirely in all the religious books of the rest of the world. Prepare a list and compare it with the styles mentioned in the other books, then you will begin to know what I mean. It's not a claim. We have positive evidence. And all the very best styles of earlier prophets have been collected and contained in the Holy Quran. فَنَادَتُ الْمَلَائِكَةُ وَهُوَ قَائِمٌ يُسَلِّي فِي الْمِحْرَابِ أَنَّ اللَّهَ يُبَشِّرُكَ بِيَحْيَى مُصَدِّقًا بِكَلِمَةٍ مِنَ اللَّهِ وَسَيِّدًا وَحَسُورًا وَنَبِيًّا مِنَ الصَّالِحِينَ. Then angels addressed him while he was standing praying in a mihrab, again a chamber specially devoted for prayers. Annallaha yubashshiruka bi Yahya, God sends you the glad tidings of Yahya. Now the child is not yet born, but he is told of the birth of a child by his name. Musaddiqam bi kalimatin min Allah. Now the translation of this part made by this rendering of the Holy Quran which I have in my hand is, who shall testify to the truth of a word from Allah. In some other renderings of the Holy Quran, it is said that he would testify to the signs of God, you know, generally speaking. But in reality, what it refers to is to Jesus Christ. This is my interpretation, and I have reasons to believe that this is what the Holy Quran means here. Because the Holy Quran refers to Jesus Christ as the creation of God through word. That is one thing. And secondly, Kalimatullah is the title of Jesus Christ given by the Holy Quran itself. Kalimatu Minhu. Which is the verse? Do you remember? Kalimatu Minhu or Kalimatullah? Kalimatu Minhu. That is again the same thing. Here it says, Be Kalimati Minallah. So there it is mentioned about Jesus Christ himself, Kalimatu Minhu. So that shows that this is the same kalma which is being referred to. Because in the Old Testament it was prophesied that before Jesus Christ, an old prophet who had ascended to heaven and sitting on a chariot would return. His name was Elijah or Elia. As we understand him, his name was Elias. He would return and he would tell the rest of the world, the whole world, that the time of Messiah's advent is close. So prepare yourself for accepting, you know, that sort of thing. So it is said, now very interesting, this child is the gift of Mary's chastity, and his mission is devoted to the service of Mary's son's mission, who is not yet born, who is not yet conceived. You see how deeply connected these statements are, and how deep in meaning they are, and how logically interwoven they are. It is mentioned that Jesus Christ, the very concept of Yahya's birth was born into the mind of Zechariah because of Mary and her chastity. So when his prayers was ultimately accepted, the first mission mentioned about Yahya was that I would give you Yahya to be the forerunner of Jesus, forerunner of the son of Mary, so that you should always remember that you are indebted to Mary's chastity, and that is also logical. So he would be a living sign of Mary's chastity, and as such he would also be a sign of the truth of Mary's son. This is why he is, you know, an intermediary between these two. Was Sayyidan, but he would not be a servant to Jesus Christ. In his own right, he would be a leader created by God, a noble man. So if you conceive the concept of a subservient person, you know, just a small man who came only for this purpose, this is what is rejected by God. It says, this is our way of doing things, but that doesn't mean that he would be in any way subservient. He would be Sayyid. Now, we have, on the authority of the testimony of various books, even the scrolls of the Dead Sea Scrolls, that Jesus got initiated first in the sect of Essenes at the hand of Yahya. So the relationship between Jesus and Yahya was that of a sardar and the one who had got initiated at his hand. That is how his first spiritual training began. First spiritual training is started from the very childhood, of course. But formally, I mean, his training started at the hand of Yahya, and when he got initiated into Essenes at his hands. So Sayyidan also refers to this event, that he would be a Sayyid, a Sardar, as far as the world is concerned, and his own time, on his own merit, he would be a Sayyid. Wahasuran. Now, again, this is a beautiful reflection on Mary's chastity, because Zechariah found her to be extremely chaste. Tayyiba, this is why Zuriyatan Tayyiba is begged for. I want a chaste offspring, like this wonderful girl is. So God said he would be Hasuran, a chaste person who will shun women, not because he will be incapable, but he will be provided with a very great strength to fight evil thoughts and passions, etc. So such a man is called Hasuran, as if he is a walking citadel in himself. Like a fort. Hasur is also a fort. So he will be well fortified against the evil temptations which come from the direction of the opposite sex. That is the meaning. And because he is born in the image of Mary, so it is so appropriate. So the prayer, Allah also here establishes, yes, I am Samiul Dua, I am Samiul Aleem. You said rightly that I listened to the prayer. So because Mary was your model, I am giving you a son very closely related to Mary. Vanabhiyan, but also he would be a prophet. Not just an ordinary chaste man, but a prophet of Lord, Minaswalahim, from among the righteous. قال رب أن يكون لي غلام وقد بلغني الكبر وامرأتي عاقر قال كذلك الله يفعل ما يشاء. Now that is what I pointed out earlier. At that time he responded when he was given this glad tidings, that is Zechariah responded by saying, not addressing the angels, that shows that they came, delivered the message, but he continued praying. Qayamun fil mihrab shows that he was addressing himself to God. He saw a vision, but did not turn his attention from God to those angels who were giving the message. That was his the extent of his devotion and purity of his devotion. So normally one should read in such a story, or such a narration, that then he turned to the angels and said, all right, how could I be given this such a child while I'm too old and my wife is also barren. But the Holy Quran says he didn't turn to the angels at all. What he did was, قَالَ رَبِّ أَنَّا يُكُونُ لِي غُلَامٌ. Oh my Lord, how can I expect to be blessed with the ghulam? Now, this word ghulam also requires special attention. He did not pray for a walad, but for a ghulam. Ghulam is the title, is the name of a child who is grown up. The newborn baby or infant is not referred to as ghulam. Ghulam is a boy who has a quality of ghilm about it. You know, the word ghilm is a very interesting word in Arabic in connection with the word ghulam. This is a word which indicates sexual passion. And for this we have the authority of Arabic dictionary. I'll bring you up to date with that. Now, unfortunately, my notes, which generally are prepared at Rabwa, have not reached me. So I have to do it just from my references, which I have in my memory. So I can't be very particular with those muffins unless I have them in black and white before me. So that's the reason I couldn't read the excerpts to which I point out. But I think this is also mentioned here in the commentary, a five-volume commentary of the Holy Quran by Malik Sahib. Reliable dictionary of Arabic, He says gulam means a youth, not just a child, but a youth. But it doesn't mention here the root and the connection. You know, I can provide it later on next time, that the word ghilm has the first connotation of sexual awareness or sexual passion, etc. So ikhtalama is a word which indicates that. And also ighlam is also used in the same sense, in the bad sense of course. But ghulam is a person, is a child who has grown up to teenage. So a young man or a young boy can be called a ghulam. Among other things, of course, ghulam is also a slave, but of a mature age. So here, Hazrat Zakariya had begged for a ghulam, which not in this sense, because ghulam here simply means a young boy, an old grown-up boy, because he was old. And he himself was responsible for a child left almost like an orphan. And he knew what becomes of such a child, how difficult it is. So he wanted to look after that boy himself. And so instead of praying just for a child, he prayed for a ghulam. And he lived long enough to see Yahya grow up into a mature age. That is the reason why the word ghulam is used. So, in this prayer, he expresses surprise in both ways. First, he was old enough not to have been able to, initially, to get a child. He was past that age. But on top of this, to have a ghulam, to be able to see him grow into a ripe age, that he said, it seems to be impossible for me to believe. But not that he did not believe. That was an expression of gratitude, in fact. And an expression of wonder at the great powers of God. So he said, Balagani al-kibaro, already I am too old. Vamraati akhir, and my wife is barren. She can't bear a child. قَالَ كَذَلِكَ اللَّهُ يَفْعَلُ مَا يَشَاءُ. Allah said that this is how Allah brings to pass whatever He desires, whatever He desires to something, to, whatever He desires to be, it comes to be. Now here, again there is a controversial point, and there is a difference in the statement of the Bible and the Holy Quran regarding this issue. The Bible categorically mentions that, the New Testament I mean, that he did not believe God, Zechariah, and he expressed doubt. So God became angry with him. And because of that anger, as a sign of his wrath, he rendered him mute, incapable of expressing himself, and his voice was lost, totally lost. So that is how he gave the glad tidings to the rest of his people, under punishment from heaven, under wrath of Allah. He wanted to tell everybody that although I am under wrath, but still I am very blessed, and God has given me the glad tidings that He has accepted my prayer. Now, this is mixing evil and goodness in a manner as is hard for us to believe. This is what I said, the internal truth within us. It can't happen. And this is not what the Holy Quran says. The Holy Quran says, God told him that yes, I can do it. He knew all the time he could do it, because the Holy Quran in another place mentions the same prayer in a different style. one prayer he sought, one wish he sought from Allah. I mean, that is not the one incident which is quoted by the Holy Quran. It repeatedly so happened. Whenever he visited Mary, you know, a desire was born in him. And whenever he returned home after visiting Mary, he prayed to God and expressed his desire in such ways, in such wonderful ways, that it can still melt our hearts the way he expresses. So in that other occasion, he says, Rabbi inni wahana al-azma minni washtala rasu shayba wallam akum bi du'aika rabbi shaqiya. In Surah Maryam, these are the words attributed to him. He was never suspicious and doubtful in his faith. He never entertained doubts about God's power. What he says here is this, that, oh my Lord, I am so old that the old age has seeped deep into my bones. Even my bones have become old with age. You know, as if, you know, the very fiber of life is completely overwhelmed by old age. Vashtala rasu shaba. My head, as if it has caught fire of white. You know, completely overwhelmed with whiteness. That is called grayness in English. But vashtala rasu shaba is just, no, the word white is not mentioned in this verse. It says, it's as if my head has caught fire. It's all aglow with age. And this is a beautiful expression too. Black hair is indicative of night and also of youth, because darkness resembles night. So in youth, one's hair is very dark. So when you build a fire in the night, it removes all the darkness around. So that is the picture which has been painted by the Holy Quran referring to Hazrat Zakaria. That shows that he kept on thinking of some ways, you know, to impress God and say that, all right, if I pray like this, let's see how God can refuse this. So what a pictorial way of praying. Vashtala rasu shaba, the night of my youth has been turned into a day of old age. By this fire of whiteness which has overwhelmed my hair. Yet he says, "Wallam akum bi du'aika rabbi shaqiya." Despite everything, despite all this, I am not one of those who lose faith in prayers, in your acceptance of prayers. I don't consider myself, you know, such a wretched person. Shaqiya, such a wretched person as to lose faith in your acceptance of prayer? No, it's not possible. Despite all this, I know that you can hear my prayers and you can answer them and accept them. This is the quality of my faith. So how could he express anything immediately after he had said this, and God said, all right, if you believe in my prayers, I accept it. There also he says, Samiul Aleem. And then he should start it expressing, no, you know, I was just joking, sort of thing, you know. I was not taking it seriously. You are serious? Can it happen? You know, that is impossible. That is, I mean, completely, you know, contradictory to the whole atmosphere which is being created here by these verses. So it was not out of punishment. And because no punishment was necessary, no punishment was required, because what he said was, that is just a wonder. Expression of wonder. Also, that was a compliment to God's powers. And that is what we also do in ordinary life. Sometimes, we know, we ask something from our parents, and when they give us, we say, really? You know, really you have given? We know they have given us. But the expression of wonder means, you're so good, you know? So that is what he meant. So what happened to his wife according to the Holy Quran is not what happened to him according to the New Testament. he is known to have said, according to the Holy Quran, as begging Allah after this, Rabbi Jalli Aya, give me a token whereby I should know that you have promised me, you know, that sort of thing. And the token given to him by God according to this verse was, Allah tukallima an-nasa thalathata ayyamin illa ramza. Only for 3 days, according to one version, according to some scholars of Islam, the meaning is God caused him, caused his voice to be lost for 3 days as a sign, as a token. Vaskur rabbaka kathiram wasabbe bil ashiye wal ibkar. You should go on remembering God day and night and morning, and extol his extol him and his praise. Now some scholars say this, but the Ahmadiyya scholars believe that this is not what was said. God did not forcibly take away his voice. He was advised by God that for 3 days you should cease to speak to people and remain here in our presence. If you have to go out, only speak in, you know, sign languages. And all the time, devote your attention entirely to your Lord. That was the reason why he was prohibited from speaking to others. Sometimes when you are praying, remembering God by, you know, with the help of the beads too, we have noticed this is what happens. You are sometimes preoccupied with a thought, and some child does this or that, and you say, you know, like this. You don't want to, you know, break deep involvement. So that is the advice rendered to him. Because the following part of the verse supports this. It doesn't say that then people would know that, that through that token that you have been really blessed. And if it was a token, what sort of token that is? He shouldn't speak. And why should the people believe that this is a token from God that he can't express? The reason is given, provided by the Holy Quran itself. Vaskur, instead of this, Vaskur Rabbaka Kathira, keep remembering your Lord excessively during this period. And night and day. So there has to be some connection between this and the potential of bearing child having returned to him. I don't know about the Western physicians, but the Oriental physicians have positively mentioned this fact, that sometimes such patients who are not virile, who are not active sexually, if they keep quiet for a while, completely cease speaking, then somehow their internal powers receive a very good influence, they are beneficially affected, and they find themselves potent. I once read I don't remember the reference, again I'll try to find it out, in about Hazrat Khalifatul Masih Awwal رضي الله تعالى عنه, the first caliph of Masih Maud alayhi salam in Ahmadiyyat, that he was a Oriental physician of a very great fame and renown, known all over India. But some of his recipes were based on his study of the Holy Quran. And this was one of those recipes he got from this verse. So some impotent patients used to come to him, and he advised them to keep quiet for a while, not to speak to anybody. And it is quoted that actually just this recipe worked in some cases. So there has to be some connection. Allah wouldn't say irrelevant things in answer to things, you know, which have completely no bearing with something. So there has to be some bearing, and this is the bearing. Not that Allah took away his voice, but Allah advised him to keep quiet for a while, and within 3 days of intensive remembrance of God, something would happen within, whereby he will be, his hidden, his dormant potencies would awaken. And that is what happened. Now I think we are left with very little time for question answers. So let it suffice for this evening. If anyone would like to inquire anything, about anything, ask a question, not necessarily regarding this commentary, anything, you're most welcome. Yes, please. मैंने का फोन कर दिया था इजिप्ट हवालों के लिए खत ले दिया वो खत कब पहुंचता है इजिप्ट
हजूर मलिक साहब हैज रिटन इन ए नोट फॉर्म इन द होली कुरान ट्रांसलेशन इट इज आल्सो टू बी नोटेड दैट दो इस्लाम declares all prophets of God to be safe from influence of Satan. The Bible does not ascribe this protection to Jesus. Could you explain this, please?
Hasn't he explained?
He has. No.
He has. He has also referred to the book of the Bible and the chapter of the Bible in which, from which he implies, he thinks it is implied, that Jesus was not given that protection. And he refers to that incident where Jesus was tried for 3 days and nights by Satan. So how can you say that Malak Sahib has not given the reference to this?
No, sir. Sorry, sir. I didn't explain. Only in this verse, he just gives the reference of Mark 1:12.
That is it. Mark 1:12 is the reference.
Oh, I see. I haven't got that in Mark. Sorry, yes.
You should have read it and you would have found it there.
May I ask second question, please? Small one.
But, you know, I personally don't any support such this style of rebuttal. If there is a hot debate between a Christian and a Muslim and somebody is abusing the Holy Prophet of Islam, you know, out of, you know, a sort of injured feeling, sometimes one has resort to such style of rebuttals. But generally speaking, normally it's not fruitful. What you should explain is simply this fact that the only reason why the Holy Quran has stressed particularly the chastity of Mary is because she was under allegations. She was, the one against whom such wanton things were said. So the Holy Quran came to the defense, and there was no reason for every prophet's mother to be defended by the Holy Quran, otherwise this would only be a book of defense of mothers and nothing else. Because according to the Muslims, there are 124,000 prophets all over the world. So each prophet's name should be taken and each prophet's mother should be defended. What sort of book that would be? That is the enough answer, in my opinion, and we should, generally speaking, suffice at that. But if somebody is very nasty and hurts you repeatedly, to teach him a lesson once or twice, as Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam had to do sometimes, you can do it. But don't rely on these things in the first place.
Jazakumullah.
Yes? Please.
Assalamu alaikum, Hazur.
Wa alaikum rahmatullah.
Hazur has mentioned that some historians deny historically the existence of Hazrat Moses alayhi salam.
Stories? I didn't say that. I said some deny.
Some deny.
the existence of even Moses and yes. Jesus Christ, peace be upon him.
Yes.
And their argument is simply this, that they are stories without historical evidence. For instance, they would say that in the history of the Egyptian kings, these events are not noted. They are not mentioned. We have got all the historical records of the, you know, from the rediscovered pyramids, etc. And the full history of the important events of those days is recorded. And we don't find any mention of Moses, etc., and what happened and all that story. So they say they are stories.
No, Azur, I got something else
yes.
to ask.
Yes,
the history is, some of the events in history are formed by the excavations or the events. For example, the old skulls were found or something. Then they may go back to history. In the Holy Quran, it is written that the body of Pharaoh will be saved, and now it is found. And it's become a historical fact that the body is found. And historians say that this is the Pharaoh.
How those could, those people who are not even aware of the Holy Quran, they're Christian scholars, so far they have been taught whatever they received, a religious education, from Christian sources. How can you expect them to study the Holy Quran so minutely and reach certain historical avenues through the windows opened in the Holy Quran, which are not even visible to most of the Muslim scholars, which have been pointed out to us by Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam and his caliphs, etc., and Muslim scholars. So how can you expect those people who are totally ignorant of Islamic teaching and the Holy Quran to have mended their views about Moses, etc., because of these verses which you are quoting? I'm surprised. What I said was that the Christian scholars have thrown some doubt on the existence, so-called Christians, they are not Christians, in fact, they are atheists in reality. But the moderns, in the modern age, it is possible, previously it was impossible in the Christian society for anybody to cast a doubt about these things. It was a blasphemy of an order that perhaps if he was born 100 years ago, he would be burnt alive. But today people have started expressing their views, whatever they are. And they say, because but I don't agree with them, of course. Of course I don't agree with them.
But I know Azur did not agree.
I just mentioned, somebody had asked me, what about the Holy Quran? Is it only a revelation, and what extra it has given to you? Then of course I would turn to that. And I would tell them that the Holy Quran is not merely a revelation. It also reveals certain facts in which history is correlated with religious processes and correlated in a manner that it would be impossible for man to deny.
Yes.
That is the beauty of the Holy Quran, but that's not the subject at this time we're discussing. That was completely a different thing in which I was telling you.
Yeah, Azur, that I wanted to.
JazakAllah. Now, Rashid Sahib, was it Rashid Sahib?
Yes.
Dr. Sahib, after Rashid, Joy Abdul Rashid Sahib, I'll give you the time, yes, because I have already promised him. Yes, please come.
JazakAllah, Azur. My second question was.
Pardon?
This is my second question.
Second, where is the first one?
I have asked one already.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
When someone is reciting the Holy Quran, only sometimes one feels these special delights, dil ka surur. But this does not happen very often. Could you kindly just give
When you eat at home 3 or 4 times a day, do you experience that special delight every time?
I want to know.
I want to know also, please.
Tell me why this. It doesn't happen all the time? It doesn't happen all the time.
No. While that should happen to you because you are very fond of eating. And still you don't derive that kick every time. And if you are reading a book with which you are not fully aware, I mean completely familiar, and which you can't understand properly all through, and no one can claim that. So there are times when you go off the track and you are lost into in your own views and things, or just reciting just like a drill and so on. So it's what happens is that when you go through the same passages over and over again, sometimes suddenly the same passages are revealed to you in a manner that they completely overwhelm you. So this is what I want to point out to you. If I accept your statement as such, that will be a reflection upon the beauty of the Holy Quran, which I do not accept. Your statement would indicate that there are certain verses of the Holy Quran which are capable of moving you specially. But this is the way of looking at your statement, as if, at which I looked at this way. And there are instances and places which are capable of moving somebody, but there are other passages of the Holy Quran which comparatively are barren, which are devoid of that special power of moving you. That is not so. The emphasis goes on shifting from place to place according to your own capability of understanding the Holy Quran and according to the special frame of mind in which you find yourself at a particular event, at a juncture in your life. Sometimes the same verse, which you had completely overlooked previously, suddenly comes to the focus, and then you realize that, oh, this verse has that beauty. Why? Because at that time you are rightly prepared, mentally prepared, as if you were just wanting such a thing. That is why I pointed out to your habit of eating. You know, when you are really hungry for something, and particularly for some particular dish, and if that is offered you, you derive a very special kick from that. For instance, I know you like sweets very well, but not every time, and not all sweets. But if you are hungry and also hungry in a manner that at that particular time you are craving sweets, then the sweet of your choice is offered you, then you will take a very special note of that, you know. So this is how your own internal preparation and the atmosphere in your mind has a lot to do with that pleasure which you derive from the study of the scriptures.
Jazakumullah.
Hello, fellow. Whom do I see? When did you arrive, please?
Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Alaikum salam. Such a pleasure. Come here and not like this, but meet me. Yes, please. Have you learnt enough English now to express yourself? Or shall we have to find a French interpreter?
I speak English very little. I speak French.
Better.
Yes.
But I think you have improved your English somewhat, haven't you?
Yes, I understand.
Do you understand?
Yes.
Better?
Yes, may I not speak good.
Good, yes. Okay. So we'll have to find some interpreter. Eh? Previously, your friend was helping you in this regard. When you came last time, your friend was here. What was his name? He is Fez.
Issa.
You are Issa, and he was Fez.
Je suis arrivé maintenant. Je priais pour Mustafa Sabit. Sahib pour faire la traduction.
I understand that much.
Yes.
Yes. Good. Yes, please. You know, if I find some time to practice speaking Arabic and French, I think within a matter of a month, I can be, you know, capable. I think I can regain my touch and will be able to express myself fluently and easily. Because most of the Arabi al-Fusa, I understand just normally. But it is because of the lack of practice. You know, in our school days, we were never taught to speak Arabic. So unfortunate, you know. We were only taught to read and write. So automatically, it doesn't come to us. There is always some lock in between, which has to be opened. But also, the similar, not of the same degree, but something like this can be said about my friends. When I go to France, within a matter of a few days, I am able to converse in French. I can read and understand letters which are written in French to me. And once Saki Sahib was a bit suspicious about that claim. So what I did was, I translated the letter in his presence and said, now go and give it for translation to Bhuno Sahib. And when he brought back, I hadn't missed anything. You know, that was just the correct translation. So I could understand him all right, but difficult to speak. So, any other question which could last? I mean, question and answer. For question and answer, we have 4 minutes now. Please, go ahead. Ashwaji, you have a mask? 8 o'clock? Huh? Oh, I'm sorry, already we have overshot, huh? Okay.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Hazur, my question is about tabligh. I've got two friends in college.
Yes.
And over the last 2 years, they've been moving from, I would say, a state of agnosticism to more religious frame.
Good.
And obviously, I've been trying to influence them. But I've come across a barrier which, at the moment, seems
insurmountable. Huh?
Sorry?
It seems to be insurmountable.
Yes, at the moment. That is the problem of cultural barrier as opposed to religious barrier. That despite the fact that, you know, they've expressed how, you know, they accept that Islam is a good religion and so on and so forth, yet inevitably they're moving more towards a Christian, you know, they want to become Christians or whatever. And I feel it's not because they feel that it's particularly better religion, it's just that to become Muslim would also entail a complete change in culture, as not merely just a change in their thoughts.
Already diagnosed the problem very correctly. They're not moving towards God. They're moving to superstitions and a different way of life. Because if they were moving towards God, then culture would become, you know, just meaningless and insignificant to them as compared to the value of God himself.
Mm-hmm.
So that is to say, they're not convinced enough. They wanted to believe in something because there is an urge in everybody, and that belief can start in a vague manner, generally speaking. And with that, if you are not fully aware of the value of God and the true importance of this belief and the concomitant responsibilities upon you, then of course you would seek the path of least resistance first, the easy way of compromising with your way of life, compromising your way of life with the new concept, so that you have to give in very little. You have to sacrifice very little. So in Islam, these people who are not fully and deeply convinced of God's existence to a degree that that belief should change their way of life or is potent enough to domineer them, they would it's automatic. They would start moving in the direction where they have to change themselves very little and yet have compromise with the belief. This is called the path of least resistance. You should understand it better because you are a scientist. So try to improve the quality to a degree that they should become meaningful. And tell them that if there is God, start discussing
How should he behave? What relationship you should have? How can you reach him? Let them first decide these issues. After you have entered this discussion, then you will find that it would become impossible for them to accept anything but the true Islamic belief in the purity of unity. And are they scientists like you are?
They're scientists, yes.
So it is easier for them now.
Mm.
Because I believe it's very difficult for Christian scientists to stay in their way of life, because somehow they have been compromising things, you know, and trying to find some relationship, even vague, with their scientific views, and between their scientific views and the religious views. But those who are atheists, they have no such background in history. So it is easier for you to hold them through the path of logic and through keeping them fixed on the path of scientific observations.
Mm.
Then inshallah, I think you'll be able to lead them rightly, step by step, to Islam.
Yes.
But again, I must point out that logical evidence of God or even scientific evidence of God's existence is not enough. It cannot create seriousness. It cannot create that impact of a living person of God, which is essential for changing one's ways of life. What is essential is a direct communion with God, and to present God as a living being who is also a loving being. And if he is a loving being, he should also be a responding being. So you must call them to this area of relationship and tell them not to believe just vaguely. If there is a God, he has to be a meaningful God with who has created everything, and there should be some ways of the conscious being here on earth to have some communion with him. That being so, you can read to them passages from the Holy Quran, from Hazrat Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam's sayings, traditions, and Hazrat Masih Maud al-Islam's writings, which emphasize this area, our relationship of man and God.
Mm.
So, inshallah, if you do that, you'll find that it's a real spiritual change in them.
Mm.
And also, I advise you to seek help from God with prayers. Those who preach and ignore the importance of prayer, generally speaking, they are deprived of the fruit of their labor. But those, I'm only speaking of religious preachers. In the worldly affairs, a different phenomena is operating. But here, this is my experience. So you better pray for them. And when you pray for them, you'll be surprised to find changes. You know, visible changes in their attitude, and they would go through certain experiences and relate them themselves to you, which would surprise you. And also tell them to pray for themselves before deciding. Tell them it is a very dangerous now, you have entered a very dangerous phase now. You know there is a God, but how to reach him? There are thousands of voices claiming, come to us, we'll lead you. So if you, after all that labor, you follow a wrong call, you'll destroy the whole effort. So instead of deciding for yourself, why don't you leave it to God and pray to him in all earnest and seek his help?
Mm-hmm.
That is an understandable thing. Easily, I think, they can be convinced of this. So inshallah, that these meals would help you.
Yes, I'm trying to, my main approach is to try and emphasize this unity of God, and that they should pray to God directly. And not.
You are doing it?
Yeah, sorry?
You are already doing it?
I'm already on the approach.
And are you praying also for them?
Yes, that's
very good. So
I mean,
you are on the right path. Something should be done to improve the quality of your prayer.
Yes,
you
see? You're right.
So that is to say, you have to put more labor into it. You see? And also the style of prayer which I have already advised you,
seek from the Holy Quran, you know, such prayers as have been begged of Allah in this area by various prophets. When they were overwhelmed, when nobody listened to them, what was their reaction, how they prayed to God, how God responded. So the Holy Quran is full of many examples of such things, so make use of them.
Could I just request, could you refer me to a particular verse in the Quran in which a prophet, someone especially prayed for somebody else to be found in the right, to the right path?
Right from the A to Z, The Holy Quran is so full of these things, you know.
Okay.
In your daily recitations, inshallah, you will come across these things. You know, I don't know which is going to be more appropriate for you, because some prayers and some verses would move you more than some others. Mm. It's not necessary that always my choice should befit you. So you do it for yourself. And that's also a very interesting search.
Mm.
You know, that would help you yourself coming closer to God.
Thank you.
All right. So now I think it's time for prayer, so we should call it a day. Huh?